The presentation will be given by Dan Morris and Hannah Goodell from the Northeast Regional Office. Whenever you're ready.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for inviting us to speak to the Council today. Hello, everybody. I'm Dan Morris, and I'm pleased that we are following Bruce Turris on the agenda as he presented to you types of monitoring and reporting controls that might need to be in place to improve data collection and management for specific programs. We're here today to talk about a legacy data collection system, one that does not or has not had that same level of tight control and timely cross-checks. It's a pretty good system, but it was designed to support analysis and management at the aggregate level. That is stock assessments and quota monitoring. Now, new programs are calling for the data to be used for qualification programs and, qualification and allocations or sector share contributions at the individual vessel level. In advance of these management applications, some industry members have been concerned that there are discrepancies in the data. So we were asked, Hannah Goodell and I, were asked to look into it, and we're here to tell you a little bit of what we found, to suggest some policy accommodations, and to update you on what NIMS is doing to improve our handling of the data for these purposes. Okay. Well, we've all heard those unprintable words before. The claims that the vessel landings data are wrong. The ideas that we're discussing here aren't really new, nor are the problems. This issue of discrepancies in individual vessel data has come up in the past associated with limited access qualification programs. In those cases, a vessel needed to have landings above a minimum threshold, say 1,000 pounds in a particular fishery, to be qualified for the limited access permit. The difference now is that instead of these past threshold type qualification, we're considering allocation or sector share programs that would use dealer data for a pound for pound per species basis. With this new twist, the disaggregating of the data down to the vessel level, there's likely to be a very low tolerance for any discrepancy between a vessel owner's records, his expectations, and what the data say. Industry members quite naturally may be interested not only in showing their landings meet a threshold, but in reconciling every last pound in the record. So that's the context in which we're considering these data. And I think it should not be a surprise to anyone to hear that there are indeed errors and blanks in the data, blanks due to non-reporting in some cases. Over the past 14 years of mandatory reporting, dealers have reported on millions of seafood transactions. Between 1994 and 2004, we received an estimated 2 million sheets of paper. These sheets were filled out by busy people and then passed along to NIMS to do the data entry. And the dealers made a few mistakes along the way, and so did the people who were doing the data entry. In 2004, we shifted to electronic dealer reporting, which removed one layer of the data handling and potential for error. Though they usually got them right, every data field in the data report can be and has been misreported or mistyped at one time or another. The data fields that affect a vessel's history for the purposes of qualification or for an allocation of some type would be the vessel permit number, the species code for each market category that's entered in the dealer report, and weight. Reporting or entry of the wrong vessel permit number means that the vessel that caught the fish don't get credit in the landing's history. And if it's another vessel's number that is put down, the wrong vessel will be getting credit for those for the catch. And the species code could be a data entry problem. So a transposition of a couple digits can be the difference between cod and lolago. So you might not get credit. And of course, non-reporting is a problem too. Over the years, dealers, like I said, there were millions of them, millions of transactions, and reports may have been missed, or they haven't submitted complete reports, or have reported that no fish were purchased when in fact there were. This results in landings not attributed to the vessel that sold the fish. And with this last bullet, what we're trying to get at is that it's not just a matter of data quality. NIMS is working to improve our data retrieval and communications with the industry regarding histories. Earlier this year, we've had vessel data history queries from industry like never before, mostly in advance of the scallop amendment. And Hannah will speak to some of the customer service, quality assurance, and communications improvements in the statistics office that, that the staff have made to address these past problems. Okay. What we're trying to stress here is that the problem is at the individual vessel history basis. Dealer data were collected, Dealer data were collected to support quota monitoring and stock assessment. And to that end, they remain quite reliable. For stock assessments, data is taken in aggregate from a variety of fishery-dependent and independent sources to derive an estimate of stock status and status and trends to support fishery-wide management. For quota monitoring, all of the timely sources, so dealer, IVR, and VMS, are considered, again, in aggregate to track a wide portion of the fishery. The green light, if you will, veers into the yellow a little bit here because we recognize that the data controls and cross-checks will need to be tighter as we parse the fishery down into smaller management units. And you'll need to have tighter controls in the future. The last item here, when using these data to make determinations and allocations at the individual vessel level, we need to proceed with real caution. The data audit validation process is going to take time. Also, if the management scheme relies on data or landings data out to the last pound, the appeals and data correction process is likely to be rather lengthy. There are a lot of data points to reconcile. We would expect that permit holders will come forward with corrections to their landings data in order to recognize every pound and to optimize their potential for an allocation. We need to plan for that as part of implementation of the new program that uses these vessel-level data. Okay. The point here and the reason we're presenting this is not to dissuade the council from using the dealer data altogether. We wouldn't try that, or to restrict management alternatives, really. Rather, it's to highlight these concerns and to adjust expectations, and as particularly as regards the timeliness of implementation. And there are likely to be some vessels, if we proceed, it will be difficult to make accurate pound-for-pound determinations and allocations for every vessel and not have some winners and some losers because there are some problems here and there in the data. And I've lost my train here. We suggest a few policy accommodations that should acknowledge the limitations of the data. First, because it's going to take time, we should consider some interim allocations. Perhaps there is a tool that would be suitable for a particular fishery other than the pounds per pound per vessel, and that could be in place for the period of the data validation and the appeal process. As noted, the data correction, some policy accommodations may also reduce the need for or the extent of the data validation and correction process. The council may wish to consider working at broader increments. Rather than determining the allocations on a per-pound basis, consider qualification and allocation in tiers. The units would be relative to the specific fishery and appropriate to it as determined by you. But I hardly venture a guess. It really depends on the fishery of 10,000 pounds rather than per pound, just moving the significant digits a bit. An example of these two policy accommodations in practice would be the initial limited access program under scallops. The number of trips were the basis of allocations for occasional, part-time, and full-time. The council may also consider scoping the qualification and allocation criteria more narrowly and using more recent records. Dealers and vessels are required to retain their source data for a minimum of 3 years. Consider a smaller data window. This would reduce the volume of data to be analyzed, appealed, and corrected. Or consider whether using best year or 2 years rather than an average or total across a broad series would reduce the effect of the data discrepancies on individuals. Taken all together, these accommodations can really make a big difference as far as the implementation process and the burden on the industry to present and reconcile data and NIMS to handle that data in the council. Reducing the number of data years from 10 to 3, for example, is a 70% reduction in the potentially disputable data points. Using the three most recent years would ensure that dealers and vessels have the records of those transactions so that any discrepancies will be reconcilable. And working in larger increments rather than per pound, per 1,000 pound, per 5,000 pound, will reduce the need for reconciling every last data point. There's certainly more and better ways to skin this cat within the limitations of the data and to minimize the effect of data discrepancies on individual vessels. No doubt the council, its committees, and the PDTs can come up with the accommodations that are appropriate to each particular fishery. So if there are issues with the dealer data, what about these other data sets, VTRs and vessel IVRs? That's a fair question. VTRs and vessel IVRs may provide important cross-checks to the data. Certain cautions need to be taken, though, before applying these or if relying on these for that purpose. And I've posted some here. I don't think any here require explanation. And I'll now turn it over to Hannah to talk about some of the activities in her shop that may address these issues.
Good afternoon. I'm currently the Acting Director of Fishery Statistics in the regional office. We've been working from several different angles to improve our data collection program. Some of our efforts will result in improvements in the near term, but others are just ramping up. Some will improve our audits of data, including historical data, while others are only going to provide benefits to us in the future. On June 1st, we are implementing a revision to the current audit of dealer data. This change will improve the current audit, which focuses on the identification of values outside of a normal range for a fishery, by updating the parameters used to define the normal range. This change will not address the concerns that are being voiced about vessel-level information. We will still have problems knowing when there is an error in what appears to be a reasonable landing, for instance, when a landing is attributed to the wrong vessel due to an error in the vessel permit number. We have established a new procedure to provide data to constituents. As Dan mentioned, we had an influx of requests for vessel-level scallop data shortly after the Council approved Scallop Amendment 11. Unfortunately, we sent out data that was wrong, and I'd like to thank Nelson Long and Paul Parker for bringing specific errors to our attention. In response to those errors, we reviewed and corrected our data queries, reviewed the data that had been sent out, and sent corrected data as needed, established a better internal review process for data requests, and improved the format in which data is presented. We will use the same in-house process to generate the data that will be used to evaluate vessel eligibility and landings when Amendment 11 is implemented. This will not, however, allow us to identify all of the vessel-level data problems. The application process will allow applicants to submit information to correct errors in their data. As part of our process review, we created a data request fact sheet, which is included in the handout and is available online at the region's website. The fact sheet clarifies the process and requirements for making data requests. The data submitted through vessel and dealer reports is confidential and can only be released to the submitter or someone authorized by the submitter. Our process review revealed that we had to improve our approach to confidentiality requirements as well as data handling. We will have some new staff coming on, hopefully in the near future, who will bring some additional skills we need, particularly programming skills, to expand our automated audits. In particular, we hope to improve our ability to identify cases where data is attributed to the wrong vessel. All of the tasks on that slide are currently underway. The next slide briefly describes some ideas that are circulating at the staff level in the regional office. We intend to investigate these, realizing that some of them may not turn out to be as promising as we hope. We plan to consider a redesign of the vessel logbook. We've talked to other management agencies that require reports to be co-signed by the dealer and vessel operator. We want to see if this approach would improve our ability to link the vessel and dealer data for each trip. The current regulations require dealers to include the ID number from the vessel trip report used by the vessel, but we don't always get the information. To improve vessel-level data, we need to be able to match the vessel and dealer reports as a cross-check tool, so we will pursue this idea. We also plan to consider whether a standalone vessel logbook would improve the accounting for fish landed by vessels that have their catch trucked from the landing point to the dealer. We plan to investigate the possibility of using VMS trip declarations to refine our review of compliance with vessel reporting requirements. In order to renew a limited access permit, a vessel owner must have submitted VTRs. Because so many fisheries now require VMS trip declarations, we would like to use this information to more precisely evaluate compliance and identify missing reports. We also plan to review the data attributes in both the vessel and dealer data collections to see if there are any opportunities to streamline the collection. For instance, the dealer reports still include a field to report the gear used by a fishing vessel on each trip. This is not a federal regulatory requirement, but it is required in some states. We'd like to discuss this with our partners because it's not the best source of this information, which is also collected on the vessel trip report. We plan to evaluate the possibility that we could create a typical profile for individual vessels and dealers that would be used to audit vessel-level data. For instance, if in recent years a vessel typically landed scallops and some finfish, the attribution of a large landing of herring would be kicked out by the audit as suspect and investigated. This is just a concept at this point, and we will have to see if it would be practical as an audit tool, but we think it might help us identify misattributed landings. And finally, we've identified staff to participate in the PDTs and FMATs for several upcoming council actions. We'd like to work through these groups to ensure that monitoring and reporting requirements get fully considered early in the process and to share ideas. And that concludes my brief part of the presentation. I imagine there are questions.
Council? Rep.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you again for that presentation. After we got it, that presentation at the NRCC meeting, we did have some sidebar discussions talking about what the potential, knowing the alternatives that we're looking at in the draft Amendment 16 document at this point, that there was a time frame that since we went with the longest or going back the farthest in history, and we disaggregate the most by going down to landings history per individual vessel, there was a sense of how long it might take to go through that. I don't know if you've had any opportunity since then in working on this to rethink that, whether it's going to be longer or shorter. And sort of a second question would be, if we came up with a single year alternative, maybe not everybody on the same year, kind of a selected one throughout that time frame, would that shorten the process of this?
Sure. I mean, anything you do to narrow the question would shorten any audit process. We're going to have issues about what documents are available to check against. So I suppose, you know, that's an issue, too. Once we went to electronic dealer reports, we'd be relying on the industry to produce dealer reports if they felt they had them to show that our records were wrong. So, as Dan pointed out, availability of those records would be an issue.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, thank you, Hannah, for all the effort you and your staff have put into this. Clearly, you've reacted to a problem that I assume is severe, and if I turn to you to ask that question, that you're compelled to give this presentation, therefore, how severe is the problem relative to, well, for example, are having a basis for qualification and allocation of groundfish sectors? You show a figure, the third figure in your presentation with a color, there's a big red arrow, that gives all of us cause for pause because it suggests that, and again, stop me if I'm overstating this, it suggests that we have no basis for qualification and allocation for groundfish sectors.
Pat.
I think I'll take that one. That's not the message here, and I don't think, you know, that's not the message here. The message is that we need to be aware of the limitations of the database. There's some very basic things. The higher the level of aggregation and the use of the data, the higher the confidence level. There's always going to be some errors, and we have to acknowledge that. So what we're talking about, what Hannah and Dan are talking about, are ways that we can, over time, reduce those errors, but we're never going to eliminate them completely. And, you know, if you think about it, 2.5 million records, even if just 1% of them have errors, that's a lot of errors. So we have to be aware, as I said, of the limitations and respond to that in an appropriate management way. And so Dan has offered some ways to respond to that. And the one that we've typically used is we allow some sort of appeal or data correction process. And you probably always want to have that component in any kind of allocation system. I'd like to see us get to the point where we do that up front instead of after the fact, because then we have a much better picture of the impact of our management decisions. There are some other options beyond the data correction where you can minimize anyway the impacts of trying to use this disaggregated information like something like best years or the Scala model is a good one, I think. So this is I don't think any of us can answer the question how severe is this. What we can tell you is that there are errors and we need to accommodate those errors. It varies from fishery to fishery and port to port and species to species, and there's no one answer to that part of the question.
Are you giving us a message then that we can actually validate data, that is, correct the database in many instances if there's enough time to do so? Because I get that impression that you're saying that. Again, because of what I read in that third slide with the red arrow. So is that true?
Yeah, we've implemented many limited access systems and many different allocation systems now using this data, and in fact, going back in time using data that we thought had less reliability. So it's certainly possible. And that's why I say we just have to be aware when we make our management decisions.
Okay, one final question. Pat, again, regarding groundfish sectors, since that's the burning question right now, the database for allocation to sectors. It seems that the message is that the service would strongly encourage the council to consider, instead of a reliance on individual vessel histories, go to some other strategy that would involve, for example, the tiered allocations, something else that would enable us to aggregate information. Is that a recommendation that you're providing as a consequence of the troubles that you've described in this presentation?
No, and I actually appreciate the question because I think it's important for people to realize that this entire effort has nothing to do with groundfish. I mean, this was going on. Or we initiated this completely separate from any of the groundfish discussions or the groundfish issues. And frankly, I think it's unfortunate where it ended up on the agenda because the implication is that it has to do with groundfish, and it doesn't. It's a data collection system for all of our fisheries. So, that's not the message. I think the message is if you're going to do that, then it does take time to do the data correction process. You need to be aware that that creates a burden on not just us, but the industry to produce records if they feel there are errors. And so I think the message is that there are several different approaches here, and you have to design the management program around each of those approaches.
Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under your policy accommodations, one of the suggestions or recommendations possible, you said that the to use more recent data would be helpful, and I think you gave the example that for the dealers are required to retain the records for 3 years, which might make it easier to verify. Is it simply those kinds of considerations that you're suggesting would be helpful, or is it because the data prior to, say, 3-4 years deteriorates in further distant from the present it deteriorates? Is it more of a matter that your data in recent years is more accurate, or is it simply that you have more tools to deal with it with recent data?
Thank you. I think it's two things. I think it's the availability of the primary records. Both the vessel and the dealer should have that. And electronic dealer reporting has removed the middleman, the additional layer of key punch that is gone. Yes, sir.
Jim there? I had Jim Odlin next. I guess he stepped out. Anyone else on the council? Mike Leary.
Thank you, John. For data correction, there was a slide in there that said acceptable documents. Could you elaborate on that a little bit? What would be needed to go back and correct some problems?
Okay. In the past, with limited access programs, as they've been implemented, the primary document that's been used to verify landings has been the dealer slip. And that's been a matter of policy for several limited access implementation programs. And there have been cases where affidavits have been accepted if the dealer slips were unavailable for whatever reason. I flag that here because as we look at all of the fishery or FMPs that may go this way, whether it's a sector or some other allocation at a vessel level, need to consider whether there are additional documents that would make this a little bit easier, whether it's for the, whether the vessel has another record that would be a proxy or a legitimate additional piece of data for the validation. That's all.
Jim Adler.
Yes, one of the ideas you had is you've taken your best 2 years or best 3 years. Were you talking about doing that on a species-by-species basis or the best 2 years of your aggregate landings? Because there's a huge difference when we're allocating 19 stocks.
We were not making the recommendation specific to an active discussion of a fishery. So that would be, of course, worked out by the council, just how to slice that up.
Okay. And if there was an appeals process, could you determine a percentage, for instance, just something I'm thinking about is, and I know that they've done this in other places, they would hold back a certain percentage of the overall quota until the appeals process was done. In other words, instead of allocating 100% at the beginning of the program, they may allocate 80% and then let the appeals process run and release the rest. Can you find a percentage that you'd be comfortable with on a circumstance like that of a holdback for a few months while an appeal went forward?
Again, I would suggest that would be amongst the council's considerations of how to set that up. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to dodge it. I just...
I think that's another good example of a possible accommodation, the kind of thing that we're talking about as you develop the management program or acknowledgement of the data's limitations. As to whether we could pick a specific percentage, again, I think that would be fishery specific, probably.
Yeah, I was kind of looking at, I mean, without the managers knowing what the breadth of the problem is, it can't be the managers that can pick the percentage that would be adequate. Somebody has to be able to look at something and say 10% is enough, 20% might do it, or something like that. And I agree, that would have to be fisheries by fisheries, but that's the kind of information we'd probably, in the case of groundfish, we'd probably need to look for.
Jim Rule.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I'm going to direct all my comments to Pat. As far as I'm concerned, Hannah inherited this problem. And I thought I understood why it was being presented to this council prior to being presented to Mid-Atlantic. Mid-Atlantic brought this issue to the table in June of last year. And I really felt like the reason that the service decided to provide the presentation was because of the sector issues in groundfish. Now I'm not sure, going by what Pat just said, that it wasn't actually, she kind of wished that it wasn't this close to groundfish. So it must be, in fact, for all species. But just a quick history. I mean, in a lunch discussion last year in June, it was brought to my attention that there were some discrepancies in some boats that had requested their history. And it worked out there were seven fishermen in the room after lunch. The council polled those seven fishermen, and seven of them had got their history. Seven of them had problems. Very significant problems in their information. So, you know, all we suggested then was that we need to look into this a little bit and find out if we got a problem. And Pat's comments then, and she's made the statement several times, and it was made again today, is that the data system that we're using was designed for quota monitoring and stock assessment purposes. I'm almost positive that's the term that was used to describe it, not for vessel history. And that's the way that, you know, we understood it to be at that time. The question is, when you have discrepancies that sometimes are in the millions of pounds for one species, and I'm going to use squid as an example, we've got 1 million pounds that are attributed to a vessel that the vessel knows that he didn't catch. So the question has to be asked, was that 1 million pounds removed from the quota? Did that 1 million pounds trigger a closure of a fishery? And that's what we were trying to get at, not necessarily vessel history information. Now, that was not the concern. The concern was to find out where the accountability was breaking down or what was going on at what point. So now I'm confused as to what management measures need to be modified in order to utilize the information, in order to use the information that's available when we know that it's flawed. I mean, you have to consider the players in this. I mean, you know, when a fisherman is consistently violated for filling out false VTR reports, which are a good faith estimate, there's been a lot of those violations. They may be intentional. Those that are intentional certainly deserve to be an issue. But those that were just mistakes, What is the difference in there making a fisherman make an honest mistake or the agency making an honest mistake? That's the question that I've got. And I don't know where we are with our quotas. Until we get some of these issues resolved to really know what the landings of some of these species are, I don't know that we have anything solid. No, and one thing you don't do is just, well, we'll apply another level of precautionary approach to it to say, well, we think we might have 2 million more pounds out there, so we'll take a couple of them and put them in the bank. That's no way to do business. There's some very difficult issues to deal with here. And one of the slides that came up on the screen concerns me also as to the future is dealer reports lack information on gear. Well, the vessel trip report copy that you provide to the dealer has limited information. It's got not a damn thing to do with gear. All it has is your sailing date, your permit number, your documentation number, and the boat name. That's what's on the copy when you tear it out of the vessel trip report, the VTR to provide to the dealer. What we were told was initially they needed that identification number in the top corner. Nothing else. So you're asking for a dealer report to provide information that it really couldn't do at this point. Modifications can be made, but the concern I have, Mr. Chairman, and the question is to Pat. Why was this presentation to this council prior to Mid-Atlantic when we raised the issue, and when will Mid-Atlantic get some answers to the questions that it's asked? Simple as that.
I got two questions out of that, actually. The first one having to do with why the presentation is now here now and not at the Mid-Atlantic is because we actually prepared the presentation for the Northeast Region Coordinating Council, the NRCC. And it was at the end of the presentation at the NRCC meeting that the New England Council asked if we could be ready to do it for this council meeting. The Mid-Atlantic did not make the same request. Dan has since asked us to provide the presentation. I don't know whether we're going to do that in June or the following meeting, but we're happy to do it whenever the Mid-Atlantic would like us to. And then the second issue I want to address a little bit. I think we have answered your question. What we're saying is we continue to believe that the databases are reliable for the purposes for which they were designed, which is stock assessment and quota monitoring. For example, the situation you point out where we had some landings attributed to the wrong boat. Well, attributing it to the wrong boat doesn't affect our use of the data for quota monitoring or stock assessment. And so as I said, as long as it's aggregated, it's appropriate for use for those two uses. Once you start to disaggregate it, you have to understand the limitations of it and adjust to them. So I think it does answer your question.
Just to point out that one of the concerns I have, and you're correct in most of your comments, but if that million pounds doesn't exist, if for whatever reason it doesn't exist, then it does negatively affect the quota monitoring. And that's what I'm trying to get resolved, because there's not that many boats have that kind of capacity. So it has to be, it's either a mistake where the fish should never have been allocated, or a typo where a couple of zeros were left off and that could belong to another boat. So that's the concerns that we have. If in fact those fish did not exist, if it belonged to another boat, that's fine. If they did not exist, that's a big problem. Thank you.
Dave Gaither.
We got a number of issues here, and obviously people want to try and get to the bottom of it, but basically we're talking about what happened in the past, and what I'm more concerned with is what are we going to do now? You know, it is what it is. We have to do something. You know, we've used this database in the past to qualify people for permits within broad ranges. Under 50,000 pounds of herring, you get this. Over that, you get that. That generates relatively few appeals. It's only the people who think they should get one and got the other that appeal. But in this case, now that we're going to various IFQ systems, call them whatever you want to call them, whether it's scallops or groundfish or herring or whatever, you're going to qualify by pounds, and you're going to qualify forever. So from where I sit, there's only two ways forward at the moment. One is to put an upfront appeals process in and put off implementation of any of these IFQ programs until that upfront appeals process is complete. In other words, have everybody truck down their data, set up, I don't know, you know, let's call Washington and see if we can get some more funds and get 30 forensic, whatever you call them, up here to sit down and have everybody bring in their, you know, moldy, musty, dusty records for the last 10 years, and we'll sit down and verify pound by pound by pound where the problems are and come up with a mutually agreeable number that is the number of pounds that you qualify for. But I do believe we should do that up front. We should not go forward and say, let's start fishing. We're going to withhold a percentage of the quota while we do this, because I don't think this is a program that can be done in 30 days or 90 days. I suspect this is a couple of year program, because I suspect that it's going to take a half a day or so per vessel. Just groundfish, it's 1,455 permits that people have got to truck through there. The other way forward would be to say, all right, let's forget the past altogether. Let's just forget it. We can't fix it. It's broken. Let's forget it. And take and reshuffle the deck, essentially, and do something just based on the number of A-days you have and divide up a percentage of the fish per A-day and go forward from there, basically saying, okay, everybody that's caught fish in the past, that's the past. We're going to start day one with a whole new system. There's, I don't know how many A-days there are at the moment. Let's say, just for argument's sake, 30,000. Everybody gets 1/30,000th of the fish, you know, per A-day, and then start all over again and let people join sectors, be in the common pool, whatever it is. You know, if somebody's got a third way forward, I'd like to hear it. But I, you know, anything that says let's shorten the qualification period has, you know, so that the appeals will be shorter, is going to go back to all the arguments we just had over the previous council meetings, where because of the number of regulatory changes we've had in the last 10 years, we can't pick out a short period and say that treats everybody fairly. If we pick the most recent 3 years, the people who lease the days from other people are going to walk off with the fishery, and the people who leased them and thought they protected their ability to re-enter the fishery are going to be left with absolutely nothing. So that's not even an alternative as far as I'm concerned. It's a non-starter. If we go back and pick a period in the mid-90s, I'm sorry. You know, again, same thing. A short period, you know, 1 year it's 30 pounds of cod in the Gulf of Maine, then it's 200. You know, I mean, oh, I mean, you got to have a long period of time to smooth out all these, call them what you want to call them. I call them injustices to various groups within the fishery. And that ranges throughout the whole fishery. It's not just the Gulf of Maine. So I think what we need to decide here today is how do we want to move forward given the information we've just been given. Do we want to, you know, start an upfront appeals process and wait till it's over and continue to develop sectors and all the other stuff that we're doing? Or do we want to fundamentally reshuffle the deck, you know? Take the cards out, reshuffle them, and say, okay, here's what you're going to get. Sorry, you know, if you don't like it, but this is what we've decided, and that's our prerogative, and we're going to move forward.
Two points to that. One, I'd remind the council that we've actually just approved and are in the process of implementing an ITQ program in the scallop fishery and are going through this data correction process for that fishery. So we've already used the data in the way that people are suggesting maybe we shouldn't. And then the second thing is, I would argue that we're in some ways in the middle of an upfront appeal process right now in the groundfish fishery, because what we've got is people requesting their records and reconciling those records. So I think we're already partway there on that.
Hi, Tom Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of points. I think anybody that's surprised by the fact that there are glitches in this data in the detail versus in the aggregate just haven't been dealing with the databases like this for very long, because I don't think anybody's surprised that's been around trying to do something with a database that it wasn't intended for. And I don't remember ever discussing these accumulation of data being used retrospectively to establish an individual's history. Second point I would make is I don't think, though I understand David's sort of either or, I quite frankly, I'm not, and maybe I'm not tuned into all of this as well as others are, but I don't think I'm capable here of making a strategic decision about the best way to go today. Is my initial response to this would be that this sounds like a working group kind of issue. You need to get the staff and maybe the executive committee working with the agency to figure out what the strengths and weaknesses of the database is and what some of the options the council are going to be able to do allocations in a way that is the most fair and supportable by the data. And one of the things is pretty clear is this is presuming that all of the allocation is going to be predicated, or it seems to me, it sounds like people are making the presumption that the decision has already been made as to how the allocations might be made, that it's all based on history. And I know there are options within the groundfish plan that are not all predicated on history. There are some other allocation alternatives that choose certain other aspects of a person's fishing activity and or their vessel or the permit to be able to establish portions of what their allocation might be. And those are areas we might look at. You know, what is the best way to allocate opportunity based on other things in addition to just pure fishing history? And what is the time frame that you use it? What is the shot? What is the longest time frame that you can support in using the database? That is the what is the shortest time frame that you can use the database for and have strength in its accuracy, and the longest that you can use in order to be sure that it's representative of being fair to the individual in terms of trying to capture his real impact in the fishery. And those are decisions I don't think we're capable of making today, but they're things that I think we ought to look at.
Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pat made the comment that, you know, we are, in fact, in the beginning stages of an appeals process now where people are looking at their data and they're starting to come up with ideas of discrepancies. And my question to you is that, you know, given what you've seen so far in the groundfish fishery with people getting their histories and noting that they have a difference of opinion as to what it is, can you give us a sort of a very rough estimate of what the level, the amount of discrepancy is, in both in terms of the volume of the fish and also the numbers of fishermen? For example, and I don't want to pin you down to a statistically valid thing, but just, you know, if there are 10 fishermen and they're arguing over 1,000 pounds, that's one level. If there are thousands of fishermen arguing over hundreds of thousands of pounds, that's a whole different issue. And I don't have any sense from how big of a problem this is. I can appreciate why we're here, and I appreciate your attempts to try to get at a good way to deal with it. But it seems to me that if we have a somewhat manageable problem, then we can figure out roughly how long it will take to solve this problem. And as I think Pat indicated earlier, it sounded to me as though the appeals process is a doable thing. It's just a matter of how much time. And that if it is doable, then our job becomes thinking, one option for us to think about is how we deal with that interim period, much like we did in SCOPS. And if we know the scale of this problem, we can think of a variety of ways to do that. So could you give me some estimate of what both in terms of the amount of the quota that's at issue and discrepancy and the numbers of fishermen relative to the whole?
Okay. At this point, or up to this point, we have been doing spot checks and responding to complaints. And there have been many data queries that that the statistics group have responded to, and where they're providing large numbers of fishermen their data. But as far as making corrections, I don't think we have a broad enough data set to really give you a percentage. Like I said, they're spot checks, and we're responding to complaints. So to assign a percentage to that, I really think would be
I appreciate that. What I'm looking for is, like, for example, if 100 fishermen have approached you to get their histories, and out of that, only 10 have complained that something is wrong, that tells me that there's approximately 10% of the eventually it's going to be a 10% problem. On the other hand, and then and the other level is, if those 10 are complaining about huge differences in their histories, I expect that few people might complain really a lot about a huge difference, but a lot of people might just be grumbling about small differences. And okay. Kind of give me a sense of which way it looks like.
Anecdotally, there are some cases of big discrepancies. As Mr. Rule mentioned and others have mentioned, in a high-volume fishery, a single keystroke error can result in a remarkable case. I think the exercise that Hannah's office and the statistics office are going through with scallops will be informative. They've responded to on the order of 180 or so requests for the landings history, and they're starting to get responses. We haven't heard back from everybody. If it's okay, you're not going to hear back, but also they might not have processed it all and gone through it. So I think that will inform an answer to your question, but we don't have the feedback yet.
It's now 3:30. It's the scheduled time for groundfish. I prefer to move into groundfish unless there's a real burning desire on a member of a council member to make a comment. David, you're burning?
Because we are going into groundfish, I have one question, and I think it's a simple one, and that is, in light of the fact that the regional administrator has said very clearly that she does not envision sectors being implemented until May 1, 2010, recognizing that the service is engaged in a real serious way in addressing this problem, 4 bullets or more, indicating what they're doing about it, I'm going to go under the assumption that we will find ourselves in a position to still implement sectors by that time. In other words, there won't be problems with the database that will be so insurmountable that we'll find ourselves stymied and unable to go with sectors unless we go with aggregated data and don't rely on individual fishermen's records. I suspect we still will rely on their records. So that's my assumption, that we're going to do this. The database will be corrected. It's a formidable task. It's a task I don't envy. And if I was a NIMS staffer having to do this, I would have left the agency a long time ago because this is not easy. I give credit to Hannah and company for working on this and all their supporting staff. Having to deal with individual fishermen to correct their records, that's not a pleasant experience, I'm sure. So that's my assumption. And if I'm wrong, okay, please tell me. But until I'm told that I'm wrong, I'm going to just continue to move forward with the expectation that the Pat's timetable will be the timetable we will eventually find ourselves adhering to, and that is May 1, 2010 implementation of sectors. Assuming, of course, we address all the other problems, this council addresses all the other problems that we need to address that relate to sector management in time for that implementation date.
We suggested the May 2010 implementation date with full knowledge of the limitations of this database. These are actually things that we've been telling the council about for years now. And so there are no surprises here for us, and also with full knowledge of our limitations with respect to the infrastructure that we have. I'd appreciate it if you'd stop telling my staff to take other jobs, because I really appreciate what they're doing too, and it has been very difficult on everybody, and they're doing a great job.
All right, we're going to move into groundfish. 5-minute break.